From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. In a speech raw with emotion yesterday, President Obama unveiled new executive actions aimed at American gun violence. He's given up on passing gun control legislation through Congress with his moves yesterday. More people will need to go through background checks before buying guns. It's a small step, and one Republican presidential candidates loudly promised to repeal. But the president is testing what he can do without Congress. This hour, On Point, President Obama's executive actions on guns. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you with the president here or not? And what is the answer to America's epidemic of gun violence? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later this hour, we'll look at the new open carry law that has just gone into effect in Texas. 850,000 handgun owners there can now, as of January 1, wear their gun right out on their hip or in an open shoulder holster. But first, to the president's push. Here he was yesterday saying the country is now held hostage. The Congress, first of all.
The gun lobby may be holding Congress hostage right now, but they cannot hold America hostage. We do not have to accept this carnage as the price of freedom.
We don't have to accept this carnage, the president said. There's a lot that could be done, but, he said, can't wait for Congress.
Once Congress gets on board with common sense gun safety measures, we can reduce gun violence a whole lot more. But we also can't wait.
But Congress is very definitely not on board. We saw that after Sandy Hook when the president made his big push then. Yesterday, he was emotional remembering those kids and more.
Every time I think about those kids, it gets me mad. And by the way, it happens on the streets of Chicago every day.
And the tears were right there. In the room, the East Room, with the president and others yesterday was Shannon Watts, founder of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. It's part of Every Town for Gun Safety, the biggest gun violence prevention group in the country with 2 million members. Shannon Watts, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
We come to you first because yesterday was kind of your day or the day of those in your camp. Describe the setting, if you would, in that room. Give us some context for the president's very high emotionality.
You know, the room was full of survivors of gun violence, people who had lost their children and parents and other family members, people who had turned their grief into activism, which is an act of heroism that I can't even fathom, and also a lot of excitement and joy about the fact that we are moving the needle, and that after asking for this for 3 years, action was taken. It's not the action we wanted Congress to take, but it's something, and it's a step in the right direction. It also shows that we have momentum and the wind at our backs.
Are you really moving the needle? I'm looking here, Ladd Everett at Coalition to Stop Gun Violence, calling this really pretty modest stuff.
You know, this was actually a big step forward. It is not closing the loophole, but it is narrowing the loophole. And because Congress wouldn't take action, the president did. We need to remember that the issue of guns has been a third rail in this country for a long time. In 2008, no candidate wanted to talk about it, including Democrats. Flash forward to 2015, the Democrats are fighting amongst themselves to be the strongest on gun safety. So, you know, what happened yesterday was significant. We still have more work ahead of us, but we're thrilled to have the president take action.
Shannon, can you describe for us the most important points that he is going for with his executive actions yesterday, what they would do?
Yeah, I mean, the president stood up to define what it means basically to be engaged in the business of selling firearms. And also, he helped improve how the country's background check system works. So what that does is clarify the law and then put resources behind it to enforce the law. You know, for far too long, we've had people selling guns privately, and those laws do not require a background check. So you, if you're a licensed dealer, you do have to conduct a background check. That's about 60% of all gun sales, but 30 to 40% of gun sales are sold at gun shows or online, and those don't require a background check. And that's where, if you're a dangerous person, you're going to buy a gun. And so what the president has done is to narrow the amount of guns that can be sold in that way.
How does that work? How would this action do that by its language?
If you are selling guns privately, If you sell a certain amount of guns, you now are considered a licensed dealer, and therefore you have to conduct background checks.
But it's not about amount, is it? As I read this, they wanted to stay away from putting numbers on this because there they get the legal challenge.
Well, I mean, they're going to adjudicate this, you know, as it rolls out. But the bottom line is more background checks will be performed. And that's our goal, to reduce the 30% to 40% of amount of guns that are sold without a background check.
And hundreds more federal employees to follow up on those, to process these background checks. What kind of drop in that bucket, though? 30% to 40% of all gun sales in America is a huge number. You know how high gun sales have been. I'm seeing estimates here that this might only lead to a few thousand more background checks out of the many, many thousands that would describe.
Well, we don't know yet. But again, that is better than no background checks. And that is what the president talked about yesterday. You know, if we can save even one life, why wouldn't we try to do that? And so the president's actions yesterday on background checks, on beefing up the ATF, on defining gun trafficking, all of those things will ultimately result in saving American lives. But look, make no mistake, that this is not the Holy Grail. That is to get Congress to do what they're supposed to do. And we almost did that in 2013, which is to pass Manchin-Toomey, which would require a background check on every single gun sale in this country. This is a national problem. It does require a national solution. In lieu of Congress acting, we're going state by state. And we have so far gotten 18 states to close their background check loophole. We're getting ready to do it in Nevada and Maine. And those background check loopholes being closed save a significant amount of lives as well.
The Republican presidential candidates yesterday just all over this, and not in a supportive way, all over the fact that the president used executive action to do this, and of course opposing it just on the grounds that it was not in line, they said, with the Second Amendment. Here's Chris Christie on Fox News. This was Sunday.
This president wants to act as if he's a king, as if he's a dictator. Fact is, if he wants to make changes to these laws, go to Congress and convince the Congress that they're necessary.
He did that. Nothing happened there. Here's Ted Cruz at a rally in Iowa yesterday.
Those executive orders are not worth the paper they're printed on, because when you live by the pen, you die by the pen. And my pen has got an eraser.
Shannon Watts was celebrating yesterday in the East Room with the president. Others were not. Among them, Larry Pratt. He joins us now from Springfield, Virginia. He is Executive Director Emeritus of Gun Owners of America, a pro-gun lobbying group in Washington. It's been called more pro-gun than the NRA. Larry, welcome back to On Point.
Hey, good to be back with you.
It's good to have you. Do you think that these orders, if they survive legal challenge and go into effect, will lead to significantly more background checks in this country, Larry?
Well, they certainly won't lead to that many more background checks at gun shows, because I can tell you from personal experience, having been to gun shows and looked for a particular gun, it just wasn't available from private sellers. It was only available from dealers. Dealers are the ones that have the inventories, and if they don't have it, they're the only ones that can order it from a manufacturer for you.
Larry, I don't get your point. 30% to 40% are sold privately now, not by dealers. Shannon says that's a lot, whether you could find the gun you wanted or not, isn't it?
I don't know where Shannon found that figure, but she didn't find it from any place I've been. I think that might be something that she sort of threw a dart at a board and came up with. 30 to 50. 30 to 50 is a huge.
30 to 40, I think she said.
40 is a huge spread, in view of the number of firearms that we know are sold through dealers. And I can tell you from personal experience at gun shows, there is not that much activity with private sales. I wish they are there. That is true, but it is not the overwhelming. It is not the preponderance of sales at gun shows. Meanwhile, the elephant in the room is something that apparently Mrs. Watts and others do not want to talk about, and that is all of our massacres, public massacres, since 1950, with the exception of two, have occurred in gun-free zones, schools, malls, whatever. That's where we could make a huge change. That's where legislation is something that we would support, getting rid of gun-free zones and stop telling murder magnates, oh, come over here. This is a place where you might beat the last guy's body count.
We've talked about this before. Your solution is to have more armed Americans in more places, essentially in all places, including churches and theaters and schools. You see that as the answer here. Clearly, other folks do not.
There was a very loud outcry yesterday from presidential candidates and more. Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House, describing this as a serious attack on liberty. Is a background check an attack on liberty, Larry?
Well, it's as obnoxious to liberty as it would be to have a background check on you before you do this show, or me before I appear on this show.
Why is that? I've got words here, not bullets.
Excuse me, but it's a constitutional right in either case, the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, and the Second Amendment has language tantamount to the First. First says Congress shall pass no law.
But not the same, well-regulated, well-regulated. You know, I mean, there is, we've got a long tradition of regulation, and most gun sales, as you say, are by dealers, and those do have background checks. So what's the big deal about extending that?
Regulation was an 18th century word that meant well-drilled. They didn't want a bunch of guys that just came together all of a sudden, didn't know what they were doing. They wanted them to be drilled. We might use the phrase well-drilled militia today, or well-practiced.
Most people have background checks. Why the outcry over a few more, as you say, a modest number more?
Because they don't do any good. We had maybe 11 million background checks last year. Maybe 14 led to prosecutions. That's not a crime-fighting tool, but it is a good way for a government that abused its IRS power and data and harassed people with all of that power and data that they had. I don't think we should in any way ever want them to have a list of who has guns in this country. And even though federal law prohibits them from keeping a list of those getting a background check, frankly, they haven't done anything to earn our trust that they're obeying that law.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about President Obama's executive orders bringing more background checks to the world of gun sales, a very, very large world in this country. You can join us. Why are the howls so loud from opponents who can still buy guns? What did you think of the president's emotion yesterday, his straight-up tears? Do you want more gun oversight? Will the country get it, or do you want less, and why? Shannon Watts is with us from Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. She was there in the East Room with the president yesterday and survivors of gun violence. And more, Larry Pratt is with us, Executive Director Emeritus of Gun Owners of America, pro-gun rights group. Here was the president again yesterday.
In Dr. King's words, we need to feel the fierce urgency of now. Because people are dying. And the constant excuses for inaction no longer suffice. That's why we're here today. Not to debate the last mass shooting, but to do something to try to prevent the next one.
And there have been plenty. The president was introduced in the East Room by Mark Barden, father of one of the young victims of the Sandy Hook mass shooting in elementary school, primary school, and managing director of Sandy Hook Promise. Here from a Barden statement.
We can't do it alone. And the president can't do it alone. The thing is, every gun-related death is preventable. And we need your help. We need everybody engaged in this.
Republican and Democratic presidential candidates coming down on very different sides on this one. Hillary Clinton has an ad out focused on gun control. Came out in November, but she was playing it again yesterday.
We need to close the loopholes and support universal background checks. How many people have to die before we actually act? Before we come together as a nation.
Republicans almost universally promising, if they should win the White House, to turn back these actions. Here was Donald Trump.
You get the Democrats, you get the Republicans, you get, and you make deals, right? He can't do that. He can't do that. So he's going to sign another executive order having to do with the Second Amendment, having to do with guns. I will veto that. I will unsign that so fast.
And there you are, the range of responses right there, the American range. Shannon Watts, does this move things out of deadlock? Do you think this will really become the administrative way of the land, or is it going to run into legal challenges and, you know, stopped in its tracks?
Well, I mean, the president obviously has a good legal team. They know what they're doing. So I'm not concerned about that. This is the law of the land. But this is not the end of the road. I mean, we have so much more work to do. Our moms are going into state houses all over the country this month. Most state legislatures start in January. And we're going to do the hard work of opposing the radical agenda of Larry Pratt and the NRA and keep guns out of our schools, keep guns off of our college campuses, prevent them from removing the permitting system and, you know, prevent laws like open carry and stand your ground and do the hard work, because really gun lobbyists like Larry Pratt have had their way with our state legislatures for decades. And we finally, in this movement, have boots on the ground. We have more than 3.5 million members. We have a chapter in every state, and along with every town for gun safety, you know, we are making significant headway. And this is the way we're going. This issue is over, and we can argue as much as we want, but we are headed in this direction as a country.
Issue is over? I don't know about that. Of course, overwhelmingly, Larry Pratt, Americans in surveys say they support background checks, universal background checks. The United States pins the needle for gun ownership rates, but it also is right up there at the top, many, many multiples of other developed nations for death by gun. Why do you think more guns would fix that, Larry?
Well, the fact of the matter is, as I've mentioned earlier, many of our large-scale tragedies, massacres, have occurred precisely where guns are prohibited, and people are forced to, in some cases, literally sit waiting to be murdered instead of enabling people to be able to protect themselves. There was the example of a chap out in Clackamas, Oregon, who was in a mall which unhappily was deemed a gun-free zone. But he had his concealed carry firearm anyway, and he was able to stop a wannabe mass murderer in his tracks when the guy saw Nick Melly with his gun drawn. He committed suicide, and that was the end of that.
Larry, I get that as an anecdote, yeah. And I get it as one response. But when you look at other countries with much, much tougher gun control and much, much, much lower death rates, doesn't that just wash your argument out?
No, actually, it doesn't. You look at France, where they're awash in real automatic firearms from the wars in ex-Yugoslavia.
And they have
suffered an enormous mass murder, which makes some of our tragedies pale. The fact of the matter is that where people can protect themselves, it works. Fairfax County, Virginia is where Gun Owners of America is located. We have the ability to carry concealed firearms with minimal effort to get a permit, carry openly. I think maybe that was mentioned. Well, for Texas, anyway. We have a murder rate in this county of over 1 million people, a very urban county, on or about the same, depending on the year, as Great Britain. So all of the guns that we have available to us in Fairfax County do not necessarily lead to the higher violence rate that is being attributed to the availability of guns. In fact, it would seem quite the contrary, because there are many places that are well-armed in this country, and they are among the more peaceful, whereas you go to gun control centers like Chicago, that's where the blood flows, where people only recently have been able to barely get a concealed carry permit, and that because of a court decision. And yet that, I will assure you, just as it did in Washington, D.C., when they were compelled to start issuing however few concealed carry permits, that brings down the murder rate.
Larry Pratt says, arm up America. The president said there with Gun Owners of America, the president saying something very different, pushing for something very different yesterday in a modest way. In the East Room of the White House, where Shannon Watts was with Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. It's part of Michael Bloomberg's Every Town for Gun Safety. Shannon, Larry, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It.
Robert Spitzer joins me right now, professor and chair of the Political Science Department at the State University of New York College, College at Cortland. Robert Spitzer, welcome back to On Point. We've talked about gun control and gun ownership in America a lot before. What do you make of these moves yesterday? How significant are they?
Well, good to be with you, Tom. The proposals, the executive orders that President Obama laid out yesterday are pretty small bore. They really kind of tinker at the margins of national gun policy. Major changes would indeed have to go through Congress. These are fairly minor. Now, the claims being made that this is a terrible power grab or that these measures are against the Second Amendment are silly, frankly. There will surely be court challenges to them, but the idea that they infringe on Second Amendment rights is patently false. On the other hand, there will be an examination as to whether the executive orders contradict existing statutory law, they'll probably discover that they don't ultimately. But when you look at what Obama's trying to do, you've talked, of course, about having universal background checks, not just at gun sales, but also internet sales, where a great deal of sales occur, and in other venues as well. It is an effort to cut into that 40%, roughly 40% of non-background check gun sales and transfers that occur. And that number does come from several studies, including a recent one, I believe, from Harvard University. So, you know, and I should add as well that part of Obama's effort includes more funding for the FBI to hire 230 new examiners, more for the ATF to do more online tracking, because there's a lot we don't know about how guns travel or are trafficked from the point of manufacture to the point at which they are, you know, used in a crime or in other ways. And so there's an emphasis on more data gathering and more rapid background check processing as well. So that's part of Obama's package, too. There were pretty marginal things, but certainly useful things to do, I would say.
We've got a lot of questions for you and a lot of listeners who want to join us. Rachel in Des Moines, Iowa. Rachel, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, the point that I guess I would like to make is I definitely think this is a step in the right direction. And as the person who just spoke said, it's a few small steps. The red flag to me, or the elephant in the room, is why can't the people that are really pro guns support this? It doesn't prevent the good law-abiding people from getting the guns that they still want to have if they're hunters or what they are. That, to me, is the red flag, is why aren't they more supportive of this? It's a very marginal few steps to make things safer, do the background checks. They're still going to be able to get their guns. And I know one of the things that Larry and a few people on his side have really said is that, oh, those bad people, those terrorists, they're still going to go out and get the guns anyway. That is a fact. So let's put our heads together. Let's spend our time today talking about how can we prevent that from happening versus bashing these few simple steps of continuing, I would think, to make their group, a rifle association, that much stronger. Because then they know the people that own the guns are sane people that have gone through the background checks. Why doesn't that make their group even stronger?
Rachel, let me take that question maybe right to that gun rights territory, if I may. And I appreciate your call from Des Moines. Let me get one more right here from Michigan, Inkster, Michigan. Rob, you're on the air.
Hi, John.
Hi, what do you think, Rob?
I think the president didn't go far enough. I think he should run background checks on just about everything: dry ice, fertilizer, diesel fuel, cars, all tools essentially, because all a gun is a tool. People kill people.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough, but not really, because how many people are murdered with dry ice every year, Rob? I mean, we have tens of thousands murdered by gun.
Pressure cookers, dry ice.
How many by pressure cookers?
I can't tell you how many, but it's all over the TV, isn't it?
Yeah, but you know it's much smaller than our gun death rate. Speak to Rachel's question. She says, look, we have background checks already, and why not have them on everybody? I mean, gun dealers already run them. Why not run them on everybody? What's the difference?
Why specifically single out the guns?
Well, good heavens, man. It's a weapon.
Violence doesn't come from guns. Violence comes from people.
Well, okay, we've heard that argument for a long time, but our death rate is so high, Rob. It's so high.
Right, and it was during the Roman Empire as well, and they were killing people with spears and swords.
Rob, we got it. One more right here, Leah in Nashville. Leah, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I don't know that even background checks necessarily are... I'm just scared because my hometown, there were school closings because a kid had threatened the whole school with a gun, and my little brothers and sisters, their finals were moved back all the way to January when school restarted, and there were random school closings just at this guy's will, posting on Facebook saying that he's going to come shoot up the school. This was in Indiana. And it's just the fact that kids have access to maybe their parents' guns, and the fact that they have the power to just shut down school whenever there's a gun threat, and no, like the public knowing that it's highly probable that this could happen, is just terrifying to me.
I mean, we have seen that again and again, and you saw the president's emotion yesterday about the death of young children. But, of course, just the fear is a pretty awful thing in itself that American kids have to put up with that. Lee, I appreciate your call as well. Robert Spitzer, compare what's on the table as of yesterday from the president with what he wanted in the legislation that he tried to push through Congress after Sandy Hook. In terms of scale and effectiveness, how would you compare? That was, I guess, something closer to the full package, the ideal maybe. How does it compare with what was put up yesterday?
Yes, in 2013, Obama proposed a package of legislation, as you suggest. It included a number of things, other measures that were included by members of Congress. Senator Dianne Feinstein from California, for example, put forward a renewal of the assault weapons ban, which was in place at the federal level from the 1990s. The package that Obama proposed also did include universal background checks. And I should say that the NRA in early 2013 was working with a member of the Senate, a co-sponsor of Obama's bill, Senator Joe Manchin from West Virginia. But when word got out that the NRA was, you know, helping craft legislation which included universal background check provision, they reversed course and did everything they could to kill the bill and were successful at doing that. I would just add one other quick point regarding one of your early callers. The thing about firearms is that they are uniquely effective in hurting and killing people. There's a term called the weapon instrumentality effect. That is to say, the weapon you have and are trying to use to hurt another person, the type of weapon you choose has a direct effect on the outcome. And there is no interpersonal device or implement that is more effective at hurting and killing people than firearms. It's harder to kill a person with a knife, with a fire, with an automobile, with many other things. So that's one of the reasons why the special focus on guns.
If this goes to the courts, I suppose you could challenge it saying it's too much executive power. That's one of the arguments. Another is that it somehow offends the Second Amendment. Speak to the Second.
It's not a Second Amendment question because the central matter involves background checks. It doesn't say people can't have guns. It says that if you're in a prohibited category, you're a felon, you're judgmentally incompetent, there's an order of protection out against you, and there are several other categories. You're an illegal alien, let's say, why you can't have a gun. And that idea has been upheld by the courts for years. The Supreme Court in 2008, in its Heller decision, where it established a personal right of citizens to have guns for self-protection in the home, said expressly that such measures as that are perfectly constitutional. So it doesn't deny weapons except to those who pretty much everybody agrees ought not to have them. So that, as a Second Amendment matter, you know, when critics say it violates the Second Amendment, that's nothing but sophistry. It's not true.
Ray in North Kingston, Rhode Island. Ray, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Okay. Our time is short before the break. What do you know, Ray?
Okay. A couple of points. You know, I've been to gun shows in three different states, and all you needed was a valid driver's license and cash to get a gun. And if you didn't have the valid driver's license, you could hang outside in the parking lot and buy a gun. But I live in Rhode Island, and I own two legally purchased firearms, and the average background check in Rhode Island is 10 to 14 days. And Rhode Island has the second least per capita rate of gun killings in the country.
That's pretty low.
So, hello?
That's pretty low. That's you're suggesting that the background check is effective in that case.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think our rate is per 100,000, like 2.3 gun-related deaths. So, yes. And it's, you know, for anybody who wants to own a gun for legitimate reasons,
Get the check. Ray, we've got it. Have the background check, and off you go. That's what's proposed here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this about President Obama's executive orders bringing more background checks to the world of gun sales with Robert Spitzer. He's out of State University of New York,
Cortland, author of Guns Across America and the Politics of Gun Control. In a few minutes, we'll look at the new open carry law in Texas that says you can put it right on your hip, right under your shoulder, no cover at all, not concealed. Went into effect on January 1st. You can join us right here, right now. Robert Spitzer, step back with us for a second. Where are we in the big gun story of America? I mean, we have seen gun sales absolutely surge in this country after the big killings that we've seen, after earlier pushes for more oversight and control, way up in 2015 again. In terms of gun ownership and gun control and gun violence, where are we in that long arc of this story?
Well, that's an interesting question. We do indeed see an upsurge, an uptick in gun sales. We saw them when Obama was elected, when he was reelected, after various mass shootings. And the gun industry itself refers to these as political gun sales. That is to say, they occur sometimes because people say to themselves, well, maybe these guns won't be as available in the future because of new laws, so I'm going to go get one now. But many people go and buy guns as a political statement to say, look, I'm doing this because it's my right, because I don't think gun regulations work, and so I'm going to buy myself guns. But the operative fact in terms of the nation as a whole is twofold. One is that overall gun ownership in America has been gradually declining for about the last 40 years. In the early 1970s, about one home in two had a firearm. These days, it's less than a third of homes. And the other thing is that with these many gun sales, what we see is that mostly it's people who already own guns who are going to buy more guns, and that's what most of these sales are. So back in the 1960s, the average home, the average gun owner had owned about 2.5 guns. A recent study from the Washington Post points out that the average gun owner today owns about 8 guns on average. So most of these gun sales are by people who already own guns who want to go out and add to their gun collection.
How do you interpret that? What is the point of 8 guns? Is it become a national fetish? Is it to go out shooting with 7 of your friends? Is it there's a race war coming and we're arming up?
Well, some of it is people who are stocking up for Armageddon, but that's a small number of people. Most of them are people who collect guns, who are interested in different types of guns. They might own some handguns. They might own some long guns. They might own an old-fashioned bolt-action hunting rifle, and maybe they own, an assault-style weapon now in addition. They're different configurations. And like anything in sales, you know, companies market their products very heavily, buy the latest model, buy something that you can interchange parts mm-hmm. in and out with. A year or two ago, I worked with a friend of mine and constructed what's called the lower receiver of an AR-15. And it was a very interesting process in terms of how you can put together your own weapon. It was a legal weapon under New York State law, and it has interchangeable parts, and it's kind of an interesting process. So there are a lot of people who are interested in the mechanics of guns, and collecting itself is a thing, and some people like to collect guns.
Of course, the AR-15, that assault-style rifle that we've seen show up in a lot of these scary public scenes of bloodshed. Marie in Royal Oak, Michigan. Marie, you're on the air.
Well, hi, Tom.
Hi.
You know, when the one thing that struck me yesterday about the remarks after the press conferences was that one of the Republicans even acknowledged the parents or the horror of what had happened to their children. And they just jumped right to the politics of it. And if they can't stand with the president because they just don't want to, they could at least stand with the parents and acknowledge their horror. And I just found that to be very shameful.
It's very interesting. Maria, I so appreciate your call. Robert Spitzer, how about it? I mean, we heard the appeals to freedom and the Second Amendment and liberty. What about the pain of the parents there? Why has that not had more political throw weight among gun rights supporters?
Well, I think it certainly invokes some sympathy, to be sure, among people, Americans generally, including gun owners. But I think there's a feeling that the, you know, bereaved families, the friends, the relatives of those who are killed in gun violence are manipulated politically. And I think some people resent what they might view as sort of the dog and pony show of, you know, the president giving a speech and then behind him are the, you know, grieving family members. But the thing is, the family members don't have to do these things, they don't have to make appearances, and they often do because, you know, they believe that, you know, the government could do more to try and stay, you know, prevent these kinds of activities.
I mean, they've lost their kids or their loved ones,
yeah,
and we lose them in such a greater proportion here in this country than elsewhere.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Our gun murder rate is far higher, I should say our murder rate is far higher than the murder rate of other Western nations, even though our overall crime rates are about the same, and that's basically because of guns.
Noah in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Noah, you're on.
Hi. I was just wanted to take a more of a cultural perspective and bring up that many people believe that, many pro-gun people believe that their last line of defense against a tyrannical government is their guns. And so is there anything we can do to sort of help people, these people believe, you know, have some trust in the government and sort of address this this sort of mindset?
I'm glad you raise it, Noah. Robert Spitzer, you think large about these things. This is a country founded in commitment to liberty, and that has become very much tied into this gun debate and fear of tyranny driving gun ownership, at least so it appears. Noah says, how can we ratchet that down? What do you say?
That is certainly true, that if the idea that somehow our government is or is becoming tyrannical, you even see that rhetoric in response to Obama's speech yesterday, does motivate some people.
Hello, Robert. Are you there, my friend?
Yes. Hello.
We lost you for just a second there.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Go on.
Oh, okay. Yeah. When people, you know, people misunderstand our own past to some degree, because when Americans were rising up in the 1700s, it was against the British, but it was also for our own representative government. And our founders wanted our nation to rely on its government for people to express their point of view.
And we got a representative government. We achieved it.
That's exactly right. And that's why the notion of modern Americans carrying guns to somehow prevent tyranny is against our traditions. It's not with our traditions, because Americans were fighting for our representative government, and that is what we have today with all of its imperfections.
What about the notion, Monique raises this on Twitter, she says that the U.S. has a deeply rooted culture of violence. Is there something culturally, not politically, but even deeper, culturally, that means violence is necessarily, you know, endemically part of the American story, and guns just somehow manifest that?
Well, we do have a violent past, to be sure, but if you look at modern America, we're not that violent. Our overall crime rates are comparable to those of other Western democratic nations. Crime has been dropping in the United States consistently since the early 1990s. It continues to drop, even though experts are somewhat surprised that that's the case. But when you add guns into the mix, because guns are uniquely lethal, that is one thing that elevates our murder rate above the rates of other Western democratic nations. In fact, modern America is not particularly uniquely violent, but we do have a tradition of individualism that does spur some people to violent actions.
Lots of Republican would-be presidents saying that they would repeal this on day one. If there's a Republican victory in the race for the White House, do you expect repeal?
Yes. Executive orders can be repealed, and certainly if a Republican president takes office who has vowed to, you know, do that, presidents can do that. There's no question about that. That's why I'm sure Obama hopes a Democrat will succeed him. It's important to point out, though, that even when you have a party change in presidential succession, it is not the case that new presidents tend to repeal whole hog the executive orders of the previous presidents. But on this issue, there would be a lot of pressure for a new Republican president to modify or repeal Obama's executive orders.
Just quickly, I know you're a gun guy, not a politics guy, but how do you think the politics of this play? Some have said President Obama has done this because this is a rallying point for Democrats, that this will help the Democratic Party in the race for the White House.
There is some reason to believe that the gun issue in this current environment is helpful to rally the Democratic base more than was true in 2008 and 2012, at least in terms of the behavior of the candidates. So, yeah, it may well be a rallying issue for many Democrats in the primaries to come.
Robert Spitzer, author of Guns Across America, professor at State University of New York in Cortland. Thank you so much for being with us today, Bob.
Oh, good to be with you.
In a moment, the new open carry law in Texas. This is On Point. New open carry legislation in Texas went into effect January 1st, allowing Texans to openly carry handguns in holsters on their hip or shoulder. There was a lot of talk about this as the January 1 date neared, about how things might change with open carry in this already quite gun-friendly state. To talk about that, we turn now to St. John Barnett Smith, law enforcement reporter at the Houston Chronicle. St. John, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hey, Tom.
Who can open carry in Texas under this new law?
So this law applies to people in Texas who already have a concealed carry license. That ends up being about 825,000 people across the state.
That is a lot of people. So I don't know. It's been less than a week, but do you see guns on hips all over the place already?
Well, I haven't seen any. We did go to a gun show here in Houston and talk to people about the new law. There has been a lot of conversation about it, I guess. There was a restaurant up in North Houston, for example, which offered a discount to people who came in who were open carrying. But a lot of the people I've talked to actually have said, while they support the law because it's an expansion of gun rights, they wouldn't personally open carry because it would give up the kind of tactical advantage that you would have if you were ever in a dangerous situation. So, you know, out and about, as of right now, we haven't really seen a whole lot of people open carrying.
Of course, when summertime comes and it's uncomfortable to have a sport coat or whatever over that shoulder holster, you may see more. There are still some places where open carry would be prohibited. Court buildings, jails, polling places, schools, racetracks, secure parts of airports, and bars. But apart from those, and when summertime comes and people get used to this, could you just put on an old-fashioned cowboy holster and head out in the street?
Theoretically, if you had a concealed carry license, you would be entirely within your rights to do so.
Does it have to be? I'm not sure what the right language for this is, but some holsters have that strap over the top that sort of secures the gun. Is that required, or is it just dropped in there?
I'm actually not sure. That's a very good question.
What was the argument for open carry, St. John?
There are a couple of different things, one of which is just that, there are a lot of other states that have laws like this, and people see, a restriction on carrying, on fire, you know, these laws about firearms as sort of being restrictive, and, that is a reason that they wanted this new law. And then the other issue is if you have a concealed carry license and you sit down, for example, and you have a shirt over you and you can see the gun through it, that's technically a violation of the law. And people who are proponents of open carry say that that could get you arrested.
I mean, it was a violation of the law before January 1.
Exactly. So that's been one thing that people say is corrected with the law and why they like it.
I've got a note here saying, in fact, it doesn't require a holster that uses a strap or any other method to secure the weapon. So I guess the old cowboy holster would work, or the shoulder holster for that matter. What if I've got a bar or a restaurant and I don't really want people striding in and out with guns openly on their hip or under their arm? Can I say no?
So that's actually been an issue for a lot of businesses. There are provisions in the law which allow businesses to post signage, which bans people from coming in with these weapons. So there's one for open carry and one for concealed carry. And there's been a lot of discussion among grocery stores and banks and all of these different kinds of places about how to handle this exact situation.
I see in one note here that Chili's and Hooters and Chipotle and TGIF have all said no thanks to open carry in their restaurants.
Yeah, there have been a lot of establishments which have, come down on that side of things.
What about, I don't know, your business, the Houston Chronicle? Can I come visit you with a gun on my hip openly?
We've actually got a sign right out front by the one of our entrances, which does not allow firearms.
We heard in this hour, St. John, the argument from gun rights advocates that we would all be safer if if everybody was armed. I mean, is there, you know, and it was right out there, and if anybody tried to do something untoward, presumably they'd be stopped by some other gun-carrying person. Is there an attitude in Texas that that's where things are going, that the answer is not gun control, but rather gun on the hip, everyone. Old West style?
You know, that's certainly been an argument that has been put forth by proponents of open carry. Law enforcement, for their part, is very concerned about that and said that they think people who are open carrying could, in fact, become victims of crimes. They might be targeted, you know, if someone was to wander into a robbery and someone saw them carrying a gun, you know, they'd become the first target. In mid-December, the Houston Police Chief, Charles McClelland, had a media availability, and he said, you know, I think you're going to see people with guns in more places, and also brought up this point that whenever there are more guns, you see more fatalities. So I think the argument on that is still out.
Well, we're in very modern America here. Of course, many historians have said that that vision of everybody in the Old West with a gun on their hip, very often you had to check your guns, even in the Old West. Hollywood may have established a lot of our understanding of what that was actually like. Texas headed into new territory as of January 1, open carry in not necessarily retention holster right there on your hip or right there on a shoulder holster, now the law of the state. St. John Barnett Smith at the Houston Chronicle, thanks for filling us in. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm on Twitter at Tom Ashbrook, NPR. Thanks for joining us today. This is On Point.